This is February 4th, Lisa Fine, Shirley Bradley. It's 10 o'clock in the morning, and we're going to interview Vern Haight, about his real memories.
Okay. Well, back in Lansing, in 26, we used to always walk on the west side of South Washington Avenue. And that way we could stop and see Ariel's home.
Oh, yeah,
huh? And we'd...
just when you were a kid?
Yeah, and we'd stand there and look through the iron gates there that they had all the way around the fence. And we'd see the fella, the old man, working in the shrubbery, raking and all that. Mm-hmm. Then we'd go down towards the clubhouse, and we'd be on the west side. Well, I'd have to take hold of my brother's hand so that I wouldn't get hit with a car or a streetcar. And we'd go in and see the movies. Mm-hmm. But then they would play the organ while we're sitting in there. And
did your parents work at the Rio?
My dad worked at the Rio over on East Michigan, where they sold the Rio Flying Cloud.
Oh.
See, when they made the Rio Flying Cloud car. Mm-hmm.
They made it in a factory on East Michigan?
No, they made it right down where they made trucks and tires.
But the dealership was on East Michigan.
Yes. Hmm. So, they'd always play that organ, beautiful organ. And that organ came from REO's home, and he got it in 1914. Mm-hmm. There was two of them brought from New York. And one of them dropped, the chain broke in the harbor in New York, and one of them went down in the water.
Oh.
While the one... they saved. And so I listened to that organ for a good many years after I started working there. So in 1945, I started working at the Rio. And shall I go on and tell you, I was out of work. And they called and wanted to know if I would come in for a day and help them in the clubhouse. Mm-hmm. And then I went in, and they said they had called 23 people for the job. They were all drawing unemployment, and they didn't want to ruin their unemployment, so they said they didn't want to come in for a day. So they asked me to work for a day, and they gave me $10. Well, at that time, that was pretty good money, because I was working out helping fellas in the farm, fellow silos, up here where Myers is. And that was all fields, you know, and this Dale Shepler was a farmer there, and I worked for him that day. So I went in, and they said, would you work, come in Saturday and help us? And I said, yes, I will. So I went in that day, and I worked around when we set up parties and swept and cleaned and done different things that they wanted me to do. And they said, well, will you come back on a Monday? And I thought, well, $20, that sounds like a lot of money to me. So I went back, and when I got ready to go home that night, they said, do you like this job? And I said, yes, I do. They said, well, why don't you keep coming back as long till we don't want you anymore? And I said, okay. And so I walked into that job, and I stayed there for 30 years.
From 1945?
To 75.
To 75.
Yes. And so about the clubhouse, when I went in there, years ago there was a bowling alley in back, and they had a library, and they used to show movies. And so when I went in, the library was there for a few months, and they took that away. But there used to be the bowling alley went out too. Mm-hmm. So when I was in there, we had the telephone office up above. There was two women that worked up there. There's Ruth Herbert and Helen Spencer. Mm-hmm.
They did the switchboard?
Yes. And so then when you went down, then we had the main lobby. I was looking up for the pictures. Main lobby, and Then when you went down in the basement, at that time they moved in the training department. That's where they used to play shuffleboard. They put that and brought in the printing department. And then there was
wasn't there a cafeteria?
There was a cafeteria down there. It was run by Bob Myers. And both their boys worked for him, Eddie and Bob. And Elsie was the mother. Mm-hmm. And then we had the girls' club was down in the basement too.
Okay.
And then there was an insurance company called the Real Benefit. And you could always tell fellas that worked there, there was nothing go there at the time, and fellas had 50 years seniority.
Mm.
And you could always tell fellas that worked there for years, because when these trucks come down the line, they would get out and crank the trucks, and it backfire and break their arm and throw it over their shoulder. And when they came put it back, they would get in their stays. They never set the elbow.
Oh, so you mean it pulled out of its...
Yeah,
like
so they always went around with a stiff arm.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So, at one time, Real was the first broadcasting station in Michigan.
WREO.
WREO. And we used to sit and listen to it on crystal sets.
Mm-hmm. At your home?
Yes. And when
in the 20s? Starting when it started to broadcast in
well,
the 20s?
Well, we used to listen to Amos and Andy. And then out and back, they were tearing out the foundation for the antenna that used to be clear up there. So that's about, and so we had the steering gear club for the men.
It was up in the upstairs.
Yes. And then they had the Real Girls Club. And we were the first there in that, and to start the Red Stocking Club there in Lansing. Remember the Red Stocking they used to, you probably didn't know that years ago. And the amateur boxing was there.
Mm-hmm.
And
so they did a lot of community things.
Oh,
for
yes,
the,
we
for
let,
the Lansing
yeah,
area.
Yeah, we let, and in 1945, we had 800 kids there for the movies. And Lauren Hardy was the last movie we showed. But there were so many, and they were so loud, you know, climbing, just full of life, and they said no more.
And that they stopped the movies, though?
Yeah, they stopped the movies in 1945. It was Lauren Hardy.
That's about when you started, right?
Yes,
around the time you started?
Yes. So then we let out the clubhouse for Oldsmobile, Motor Wheel, different organizations in Lansing. Anybody wanted to rent, they could.
That was your job, to schedule things?
Well, I worked for a fellow by the name of Charlie Griffin when I went there.
Griffin?
Yes. And Jerry Byrne was personnel director. Did anybody ever tell you about him?
Charlie Byrne?
Jerry Byrne.
Jerry Byrne, I'm
Jerry
sorry.
Jerry Byrne. B-U-R-N-S?
B-Y-B-R-N-S, something like that.
No, I haven't heard that name. Are you sure?
No.
Jerry Byrne.
Yeah.
But
did you ask us if we'd ever heard of Jerry Byrne? No, we haven't.
He's personnel director. Well, then, all right, then I better tell you that when I went there, that Henry Hunn was president. And then after he left, Joe Scheer came in.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bonamoon got involved with the Real. And then John Tucker was president. And then in come Hanson.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody tell you about Hanson?
Hanson, yeah.
Z.R. Hanson.
Yeah.
And then Heinisch came in. Jack Adams. And I worked for all these fellas.
Mm-hmm. Were they good to work for?
Oh.
You remember any problems?
No, They treated you like a human being. They were gentlemen. And Eaton was another president. And then in come Capert and Mrs. Johnson. And I worked for all those people. So I must have done something right.
What was your opinion of Mildred Johnson?
She treated me very nicely.
She did.
And I met her sons, and I met the boy, her brother.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful woman.
Was she?
Yes, I have a picture out here of the house. But you've got me at the wrong time. Because I have yard sales after I retired. I've had yard sales for 19 years. Something to do.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of my pictures are covered up out there in the garage, but I'll show you what I have to and I have got.
Mm-hmm.
But no. Mildred Johnson treated me very nice.
What about Mr. Capper? Did you meet him?
Oh, yes.
What did you think of him?
He was a gentleman to me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He always talked about his family.
Oh, he did?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Talked about his family. And so I can't say nothing bad about him, and that's true.
What exactly was your job at the clubhouse?
Well, I went there as a janitor. And then after Charlie Griffin quit and went to the state, I took over his job, and he still classified me as a janitor.
Oh.
They wouldn't change it, because there was a lot of fellas that wanted my job. And they thought, well, you keep him at that, and that's it.
But you ended up doing all the scheduling.
Yes, so I ended up doing all the scheduling, renting, and anything was to be done, that was my job.
Okay. Just to oversee what went on in the clubhouse.
That was my job. They never bothered me. It was like I run it. It was like my own place.
So you were the manager, really?
Yes.
But you had the janitor classification
on
your papers.
That's right.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes. That's what they done to me. So I didn't care, because that's the way it was. And I belonged to union.
Oh, you did?
Yes. And
was that optional, or did you have to belong to
it? I had to belong to it.
Mm-hmm.
When I went there, I belonged to it.
Mm-hmm.
But
so you were there when they had all the strikes in 46?
Yes. But all these presidents that was there, they were gentlemen. And I used to work, how I got in with these presidents and doing this work, I knew a fellow by the name of Otis Dumas. He was a color, a black man. Got to all right.
Sure.
And what a gentleman. Oh, he was so loved by everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And he took me under his wing, and he'd say, now listen, when I need somebody to chauffeur, you go with me. And we go a lot of places where we need different two cars at a time.
Oh, I see.
And so we got to be pretty close friends.
Mm-hmm. Was that his position?
He was a janitor, too.
Oh, he was a
janitor. He was classified as a janitor. But we both were classified that way.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody would ask for a job. So they wanted it at times.
Mm-hmm.
Because they all heard of all the banquets and the parties and the music and we'd have...
We heard a lot about the dances that went on.
So
it sounded like fun to...
It was... I loved it. Now that's all that... I just live it. And I still dream about the real. I'm working with these fellas that I've worked with for years. It's terrible. My wife was just telling me this morning, she said, why do you do it? And I said, I can't... Well, I'd go to work in the morning at 8:30. And I'd set up all these parties. Then I'd be, and I'd stay right on, and I'd work from 8:30 until 12 at night.
Mm.
And I don't know how I've done it, because I worked day after day after day, year after year.
You never had any layoffs or...
No.
It was steady.
And, and when I'd have to practically beg to get my 2 weeks vacation, because everybody said, hey, Vern, we're coming in for a wedding reception. We're coming for a dance. We want you there. And I said, hey, listen, I got to get away for a week. And what went on after I leave, I could care less. But when I come back, my job was always there.
The clubhouse made Rio special, didn't it?
The fact
that they had the clubhouse and all the things that went on there.
Yes, because that was the only place. Civic Center wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have nothing. But there was a woman's clubhouse up 3 or 4 blocks from us.
That's right.
That REO's had. And,
it's still up there, too.
Yes. But you know, it was kind of bad. They never took one brick from the old house and kept it. They just tore it down.
His residence where
yes.
he lived.
Yeah.
Did you see it being torn down?
No. I didn't want to see it.
I don't blame you.
And I didn't go back when in my 30 years I never was laid off, and I never went back to watch them tear down the clubhouse. When I handed the keys over, it was an awful empty feeling.
Yeah, wasn't it?
But we used to have Woody Herman, Count Basie, Stan Kenton come there with their bands.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And Governor Williams was always there for talks and speeches, and he'd call square dances.
Oh, he did?
Oh, sure. Oh. I've been around a lot of the governors, but I've got to think of the other one. He wasn't the head of the wooden legs.
Kim Sigler?
I saw him, but I...
I'm trying to think too.
Talk about a neat-looking man Kim Sigler was.
He was very dignified and distinguished.
Oh, yes.
George Swainson? Governor Swainson?
That's what I want to tell you. Now, he lost his legs in the Korean War. And when he come up those steps, and there was a lot of steps to get up there in that clubhouse. Yes, and with those wooden legs, he walked up those steps, he wouldn't believe it. Get out and dance.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd have his pictures taken. He always had two old cars in the main lobby. And he'd get up there in the car and had his picture taken. That's when Hansen was president. Mm-hmm. And Biggie Munn was always there.
Yes,
Biggie Munn was always, he and Hansen were good friends.
Oh, they were.
Oh, yes, very close and high up in Boy Scouts.
Oh,
Duff Doherty. And, how do I want to say? No, guys? What's the name of the baseball field there? No, not Cobbs?
Cobbs. Is it Cobbs Field?
No,
I think so.
Well,
the one up at State.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, he used to come there a lot.
Uh-huh.
But Biggie Munn, when he came in there, see, he was one of the first that won the championship at the Rose Bowl for State.
Yeah.
And we used to have the big banquets for all the coaches, the downtown coaches club.
Oh, that used to be at the clubhouse.
Oh, yes. And when he'd come, the place would be packed with coaches from all over, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Indiana.
All the Big Ten coaches.
Yes. Oh, and all the people that belonged to it. And when he walked in and walked down towards the podium, you wouldn't believe it. They just separated just like the Lord was walking in. Big aisle. Oh, he was something.
That's amazing.
Oh, he was something.
He was well-liked.
Oh, yes. And
then, you got to meet him?
Oh, I was with him and attended bar at his house.
Oh, really?
I attended bar.
He had you come to his house to help with some parties?
Yes. And out to Hanson's. And I attended bar and run the movies. I done everything.
Mm.
And still I was considered, that was my, and anybody seen the day they introduced me to their wife, and they always said, this was a janitor that done the real.
Oh,
but I,
doesn't that kind of bother you?
Well, sometimes, but in order to get around that, a lot of times they'd say, well, what is your position at the real? And I'd say, I'm a sanitary engineer. You know.
Well, you did a lot more than that, though.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. You managed and directed that clubhouse. Yeah. When you had a banquet, say you had a banquet coming in, what did you have to personally do? Did you have to arrange for the food, the decorations? Or
Mr. Myers downstairs would serve the food, and I would set them up 8, 9, 1400 at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd bring in some help to help me.
I was going to ask if what kind of a staff you had.
Well, I was the only one. So it all depended on me that it had to be done. And so Mr. Myers would bring in boys to help me set up and get the microphones. I'd have to get the microphones, the speakers, everything had to be done.
Where did he draw from the factory for people to help
him?
No,
he'd hire people.
He hired people from, say, a catering service?
And he had a big staff down there.
You heard the food was good.
Oh, Lord. And from Oldsmobile, good.
It's beginning to make me hungry. Now
yeah, I know.
And you know, all those years, I never had to pay for no meals.
Oh.
And a lot of my clothes is furnished.
Oh, really? But, like uniforms? Did you have to wear a uniform?
No. When I... And we'd have to have our red jackets
and
all that. And when we tended fire, we were, I'd always hired Otis, that I talked about, and if, and
Otis Loomis.
Yep. And I can't understand. It would be over 25 years. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, from the Olos, every day, they walked over from the Olos, 80 people. Every day that I was there, they never missed coming from the Olds to eat at the cafeteria.
Oh, for lunch or supper?
Lunch.
For lunch. People that worked at the Oldsmobile came to...
Oh, yeah, talk about food. Lord. And so many bowling banquets. Mm-hmm. Big, thick steaks, you know. And maybe 35 to 50 bowling banquets.
Oh, man.
We were known all over. And Howard Sober's men would come and bring truckloads in to eat there.
Mm-hmm. He owned a Holloway business, over the road haulers to haul the cars.
He did. But,
oh my gosh. Gee, you just met all the greats and near greats, didn't you?
Well, yeah, and then Jerry Byrne was a very strong Republican, and Al Zimmer, that was a Jerry Byrne was a Democrat, and Al Zimmer was a Republican. And I want to tell you, that wasn't good.
Why
is
that?
Well, Al Zimmer was just a full Republican, and I mean, when Governor Williams got it the last term, he was so sick he had to go to bed.
Oh!
Yes.
Because the Democrat was in.
No, because the Democrat was in. He won the Republicans.
Oh, he was really a staunch party man, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a general manager out in the shop, mm-hmm. Zimmer.
Right, we've heard his name too.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he could be rough.
Could he?
Oh, yes.
Very strict disciplinarian type of...
He would go through the shop at night, and if anybody left the light on over their machine, he was there to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a nice man, but he was strict.
He expected good performance from you.
You better believe it. And I want to tell you, they put the trucks out. He was a good man. And after he left, Claire Loudenslager took over.
What do you know about Claire Loudenslager?
I worked with him for him. And another thing I had to do was to take 17 cars a week over to have it washed and their cars gassed. And see, that was taken care of.
Are these for the people who
are
high up in the management?
Yes, yes.
Oh, so I see. Not company cars, but the executive's personal cars.
No, the company cars.
Company cars, okay.
But he was a good man, mm-hmm. and I might tell you he was strict.
Was he?
Oh, when he gave an order, you better jump. Mm. Because he wanted things done right. And when he, when the Rio went down, then he went with Cata.
Oh,
yeah. And he's the one that put Cata on the map.
Oh,
Lansing.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So, this Hanson, oh, what a man. Don Heinisch. All those fellas, you just can't believe when you rode beside them, driving along beside them, they always treated you so gently. And then out in front of the Rio, there used to be, we used to have an old car, 1933. It was black. And we would take that car out, and I would have to go out with the chauffeur and pick people up from the airport.
Oh.
You asked me if I worked. I done everything. So this car was a 1933 flathead 8-cylinder. And I used to have to go out, and at one time we were owned by... White Motor, mm-hmm. and I'd have to go out and pick up the president. And I remember him saying to me one time, he said, who are you going to vote for, Nixon, or are you going to vote for Kennedy?
This must have been in 1960.
And so I want to tell you, that put me on the spot,
yeah.
because I didn't know what to say. Well, I said, I guess I might as well not lie to you. I'm voting for Kennedy. And he said, so am I.
Oh.
He said, you're my man from now on. Come out and pick me up.
Oh.
And then there was another little fellow that used to come in there. I can't think of his name. It's terrible. I can't believe I'd forget that man's name as much as he... And he'd come through the cafeteria. And I walked over to him. I said, do you care if I carry your tray to your... I never knew the man. I said, do you care if I carry your tray over to the table? Oh, he said, I'd like to have you. So, come to find out, he was chairman of the board at White, and he was in there studying around, seeing what was going on.
Oh, he from White Motors?
Yes.
Because they were getting ready to buy it?
Well, they owned it.
They already had it.
They already had. And so I got, and he was chairman of the board, and we used to pick up the president. And I didn't know who he was, but one day they had a meeting there, and we had meetings from they were there from all over the United States. Their salesmen, and one of the presidents, I'd rather not mention his name.
That's fine.
Didn't introduce me. He said, whoop, wait just a minute. He said, Mr. So-and-so, here's your man that, look what he's doing for this company. Your mainstay. And you didn't introduce him? I felt that high, you know, because I knew all the fellas. I didn't think nothing of it. But he did. And he also was part owner of the Cleveland Indians. So he was isn't that awful? I can't. Mr. Black was his name. Mr. Black. But oh, would you ever like him? He's a little short fella. Wore dark suits. And he would what a gentleman. You wouldn't have believed it.
Yeah.
But from that time on, I could walk all over that shop. I didn't even need a badge.
Is that right?
Plant Protection never said, Vern, you can't. Where I went, it was it.
Uh-huh.
And what made it kind of bad, I belonged to Union. And a lot of people was afraid to talk to me because they was afraid that I'd run back and tell management. Never did. Mm. They never asked me nothing. And I never went back and talked.
Mm.
That wasn't what I was hired for. But,
Mr. Blackwood, the chairman of the board, or he was the president?
He was the chairman of the board of
White. Of White owners.
And he was also an owner in Cleveland Indians. But you know, we made, at the Rio, we made the Rio Flying Cloud. We made the trucks. We made lawnmowers. We made toys. Did anybody tell you about toys?
No. What kind of toys?
Well, there's kids' toys.
Like wagons?
Yes.
Scooters? Or?
Yes. We made toys at the Rio.
Hmm.
And crossed over where John Dean is now. The Rio used to own that too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And down on South Washington, that would be Mount Hope in South Washington. We owned that building too.
Was that the truck plant?
Yeah, it was a truck plant.
That was the truck plant.
Yes.
Where were the toys made? In what plant? Like downtown on Vancouver, Washington?
No, it was. I think it was. I'm not sure, but I think it was there where the lawnmower. And then one day, my job when I went there in '45. The agreement was, I worked in the clubhouse 6 months, I worked on the lawn the other 6 months.
Oh, outside,
yes.
Doing yard work.
So, I got pretty good at it. In fact, I was taught by the man that worked for REOs, the old man that worked up to his home.
Oh, his gardener?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so he came down and showed me how to take care of the shrubbery. And clubhouse was by the tracks, you know, the railroad tracks. And at the time, I'd worked one block And that would be down, years ago, there was a fire department down there. Mm-hmm.
That's right, there was.
Yes.
Right on the corner of Baker and Washington.
That's right.
Southeast corner.
Yep. And so I was taught by this fella. And so one day I was working there and putting in some tulips. And in drove a car, and out come an old man. It was Harvey Oaks. And I had my lawnmower running, and I said, she's come up to me, and he's a little bit of a short fella.
He was?
Yeah, he was short.
Oh, really?
Wore glasses, gray suit, black shoes, I remember. And he said, how's lawnmowers work? And I said, just fine. He said, let me try it. And I said, oh, it's your long years. And I said, ooh, I don't know. And I let that clutch out of that lawnmower, and I want to tell you, he flew. And I ran up alongside it and shut it off. And he turned around, went back to the car, and that's the last I seen him at that time.
Yeah. He didn't say anything to you?
No.
He just turned and went back.
I think it surprised him, it shocked him.
That would go that quickly.
Yeah, because he was probably used to a hand mower.
He wasn't a young man then either.
No, he wasn't.
Yeah. And he hadn't worked a power mower before.
So, later on, and then... do you want me to tell you all this?
Sure. Yes, absolutely.
Well, anyway,
these are the kind of things I love to get.
Jerry Byrne was he was a big fellow, good size, and smoked cigars, and oh, he had class. Oh, he had it. And his secretary, Fern Placeway, worked for him.
Oh, we know Fern. We met her.
Oh, she's a nice lady.
Yeah, we're hoping to interview her very soon.
And sometime tell her he was out here.
Okay.
But Fern Placeway was a nice lady. And at that time, and Hilda Smith was in there too.
Oh, yes.
And she just passed away here.
Oh, I didn't know she passed away.
Oh, yeah, she passed away.
Because we went to visit her at
Tenderton. Yeah, I did too. So she passed away, and then there was a nurse by the name of Mrs. Mead. That was there.
In the first aid?
Yes.
Mrs. Mead?
Yes.
You're going to write that, right?
And, she was a nice lady. You couldn't have found a nicer person. She loved everybody. So when she left, Ardeth Patton came in.
Right. We've been in touch with her.
And talk about class. But she had her uniform on and a little white hat. She had class. Loved by everybody.
Hmm.
I mean, there was class. So, but there were so many out in the shop, the foremen that worked for Claire Loudslater. There was Don Bayshore.
Yes.
And then over in the personnel office, there was that one, and the fella just passed away, Al Axline. He just passed away.
I saw that in the paper.
And Bill Carroll. Did you ever talk to him?
Bill Carroll?
Carroll.
Carroll. No, but we met him at one of the reunions.
Bill Carroll. There's another one. He had class. But everybody had class. They were just a big, happy family.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care who you were one of the gang.
Mm-hmm. And it had that feeling the whole time you were there?
Yeah. Well, it changed as time went on.
Towards the end,
because a different class of people come in and things didn't go just right.
Mm-hmm.
But
the last few years, when did that start to change, do you think?
Oh, probably a year, last year for me.
75? Starting in the 70s?
No. Probably 74, 73, 74. But when you talk about Mr. Johnson, pretty woman, class, and all the money that Capert had, he treated just like a janitor.
Oh.
I used to take him up to Elma, his college, you know, he was had quite a lot to do with his school.
With the Elma College?
Yes.
College, he did?
Yeah, yes.
He was on the board or something?
He was on the board up there. And he had the nice big planes that they brought in, that he bought from England.
Plane?
He had a plane, and it would hold 90 people.
Oh, wow.
But he took all those seats out. He took all those seats out, and that was all the nice davenports and chairs, the bar in there. And someone told me that it took 90 gallons of gas to just get it off the ground. It was that big.
And he used it to...
go back to Mississippi.
Oh, to go back and forth to Mississippi.
Yeah, he and Mr. Johnson.
Did you ever get a chance to ride in it? Or?
I've been in it. I was always afraid to ride in the planes. I had chances to go to Washington, Chicago, all those, and I just didn't like planes. But now I do now, after my son-in-law's got me going to Las Vegas and different places. But then my daughters, I had two daughters, and one of them had their wedding reception at the clubhouse.
Oh, what year was that?
And then I got to think that over. And then okay. I had another daughter that she's teaching school up here. She's still there today, 29 years. And she used to bring her tricycle and spend the day with me.
Oh.
And both the girls bring their coloring books and spend the day with Dad. That was a big deal.
Oh, was that?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I got their pictures out here. In the, but... I'm sorry you come at this time because there's so many, so much of the things that I gather up during the wintertime start out selling. A lot of pictures are covered. But I have pictures of REOs.
Oh.
And I have...
Did you live out here in Weberville when you were working
yes.
at the
REO? Yep.
You always went back into town?
Two or three times out a day.
Two or three times a day?
I was on 24-hour call.
Uh-huh. Oh, you were?
Yep. If I get home and they'd say, Vern, can you go, can you come back? And I'd have to back up and have something that had to be done for them. Or I'd have to go take their cars and go to Metropolitan Airport to pick up people.
And then you'd have to go back into town.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, never knew.
That'd make it a little difficult for your wife trying to plan meals and...
Well, no. Because my wife went with me.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yep, my wife went with me and always spent some, I spent so much overtime that she'd come in and get a chance to see all the entertainment, all the eats. And so we spent all the years together. We've been together 53 years.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So.
But your daughters went to school out here?
At Weberville, yes. My oldest daughter was now Victorian, was a DN, something like that for good, I can't tell you.
DAR, a word for good citizenship.
Citizenship, yes.
High marks.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And she's been up here 29 years teaching. She'll retire next year.
Oh.
And my other daughter is at Lance Community College. Secretary, she just got her 20-year pin.
Wow.
So I educated the girls good, got good jobs. But then the second time that I met REOs, I was out on the yard again. And I was always from the clubhouse to the main office, back and forth, back and forth. And he drove up, and he was so old then, and they brought a truck up. And he was so old, they had to pick him up and set him in the truck.
Oh, really?
Yep, in the modern truck. And that was the last that I saw of REOs.
That must have been close to the end of his life.
Yep, it was. And we used to have a canopy out in front where they drive, oval drive, that canopy. And Jerry Byrne, like, he was classy. And he wanted, we always had, every year, a 21-foot Christmas tree.
In the clubhouse.
At Christmas time. And when I started, and my job was to go out and get these 21-foot Christmas trees. Well, there was Christmas trees that were little bits of things. And every year, you know, they grow a year. They grow a foot. And by the time I left, they were tall. And so I never had to worry about finding 21-foot Christmas trees. They were that
Are you saying that they brought live trees and planted them?
Yes.
Yes. Oh.
Yes, and we'd have to
clarify this for the tape.
Then we'd have to put. We did a big truck on it. Take a truck out, lay them on this truck, and bring them in. And then we'd have the carpenters come in and put these trees up in the corner, so that and put wires on them so they couldn't fall over. And that went on for years and years. And one time, the steering gear club, we always have Christmas parties there, and that little kid came in and said, "Mom, they never took down your Christmas tree from last year."
Oh.
See, they were the same size.
Oh.
So Jerry Byrne said, "Well, why don't we put a 21-foot Christmas tree on top of the canopy?" And so we got a hoy or a truck over, what do you call them?
With a high arm or something.
Yes, to pick it up. And when they put it on there,
it would hold it?
It dropped right on through.
Yeah, that's what I...
It was rotten. The roof
what was... What the canopy made out of?
Well, it was wood.
Oh, but it wasn't a canvas thing.
No, no.
Had been there many years.
Well, you'll see it when you go out, pictures that I've got.
Okay.
And it was made of wood.
And it went right...
It went right on through and dropped to the floor, right to the ground. Well, that's when you took the canopy off.
Oh.
So,
Oh, had you said to him beforehand, "I don't think it'll hold"?
No. Oh, you didn't. No. You never told them.
Oh.
They told you. That's why we got along good. But this oldest, I was going to tell you, he was just like I was. He washed cars, and he used to make awful good money. And he was a janitor there. When they wanted anything done, they called him. And I'd always say, "Otis, I'm going to take your job from you. Just go ahead. Try it." But he was so well liked that there was hundreds of people there at his retirement party. Yeah.
And that was held in the clubhouse?
Yes, all these parties. But and then one time I was telling Zimmer, that was so religious, or so Republican, that he heard our president, Nixon and Pat and Eisenhower and his wife was going to be stopping at the crossing at Grand Trunk. So he came over and he said, "I want to tell you something." He said, "I want this porch all cleaned. And I mean clean." And we used to put flags out, and there was chairs out in front where people come set. I mean, it was the place.
Mm, on the porch.
Yes. And I said to him, he said, "I want you to put the flags all out." In a joking way, I meant it's a joke. I said, "Do you want me to put 13 flags out?" Ooh, that didn't go over too good. That didn't go over good. Well, anyway, so up come, and so the train came in. It was Eisenhower and his wife and Nixon. And there was Pat, and he talked for a while, and he let the whole shop out. And that was something unusual. He let the whole shop out so they could come over and be there when Nixon came in.
So
and
they
Pat.
Lined up all along the track then, the workers were?
All over. Now all Lansing was there.
And did you have a good spot where you could see?
Well, I went up above so that I could look down. Yes, I had a good spot.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was my job to be around. Because when they, right there, and I mean to be there. Mm-hmm. That was my job for 30 years. So, we had a lot of hockey players, hockey teams there, the baseball teams, all Detroit teams used to come there for when the kids, so that they could see the Tigers and all the and the hockey, Ted Lindsay and Howell and all them fellas. But when Governor Williams came down, they had a big doings uptown, and I got a chance to see President Kennedy.
Oh, did you?
Yep, I saw President Kennedy.
Did he come at the same, Grand Trunk Crossing?
No, no. No, he was uptown in front of the car. They were parading him around Lansing.
So you saw him in front of the Capitol?
Yes, I went up there to pick up my daughter at community college. She commuted back and forth. She, for 30 years, I had the same hours from 8:30 until 5. And then when I worked overtime, then the girls would stay right with me, or my wife would come in years ago all the time on the bus, the Greyhound. I'd go pick her up, and we'd spend our time 8-10 hours at the clubhouse. And that all had to be cleaned up for the next morning before I ever went home. And then I was up the next morning at 8:30, right back to work. That went on, like I say, years. But so I did get sent in there. And so this Mr. Hansen came to me one day and he said, "Say, I got a job for you." I said, "Fine." He said, "I want you and your wife to go down to Detroit. I can't go, and I got these tickets, and I want you to see Eisenhower. We're having a big banquet down there. And and when they got down there, there was 300 and some people sitting on a podium, or sitting on the head table. They had three tiers. And so when it got down, we were supposed to go down on the train, and I said, "Nah, I think I'll drive." So my wife and I went, and we drove. I got a chance to sit beside Eisenhower and eat. Because when they got down to Novi, the car hit a truck. And so it held them up. So Ingham County people got a chance. So I pushed myself up to be just as close as I could to it. But I've seen a lot of the presidents. And I saw Kennedy, and I saw Truman. And I've seen President Roosevelt. His wife.
All here in Lansing?
Yes.
When they got to Lansing. Oh, how amazing.
Yeah, and I saw Truman. And then my wife and I drove up. We saw Carter. We went out to Carter's home, Plains, Georgia. Mm-hmm. I've seen so many of them.
Who did you think of Eisenhower? Was he as tall as you thought he would be?
Yeah, yes. He was a tall man. Yeah, I read a lot about Eisenhower. And in fact, I've got my book here on Richard Nixon.
Oh.
So I saw a lot of them.
Sounds like you were in a position to have this kind of an opportunity.
Yeah, it was what I done. And you see, years ago in 26, I saw Tom X.
You did?
And Hoop Gibson.
Did they come to the clubhouse?
No, they were in Lansing. So I got a chance to see them.
How did that happen? Where were they?
I was going to Oak Park School. And you remember the park there? It's still there.
Yeah.
Across an old motor wheel.
Yeah.
And I see a crowd out there, and they went out there, and there was Tom Mix and his horse, Tony.
You must have been just a little guy.
Yes, I was. But that was a thrill.
How exciting for you.
But
You grew up in Lansing?
We left in 29.
You left Lansing in 29.
In the Depression time.
And
we came here, and my dad was a blacksmith.
Here in Weberville?
Yes, and he used to shoe horses, and I've seen him shoe horses many, many times and throw them on their side because they were mean. They had to stake their legs to the ground.
Oh, really?
So he could shoe them. And I went to school here in Weberville.
But you said he worked at the Rio, too?
Yeah, at East Michigan. At the sales department.
When did you start there?
Pardon?
That was my dad. Oh, your dad.
Yeah.
That's where he went.
Yes.
Okay.
That's when he made the Rio Flying Clouds. And my dad, on Sunday, his job, too, was to take them for trips to see how the brakes worked and how the car worked. And we'd always head for Holland, Michigan. And I want to tell you, we'd really go. Yeah, it was his job to
test. He was a test driver.
Yes. He was a foreman, too.
Mm-hmm.
But that was his job.
Hmm.
Oh.
Was this before or after he was a blacksmith? Because I'm just trying
No, before.
he worked at the Rio before he...
Oh, yes.
Yeah, did
26, 27.
Okay. And did he lose the job at the Rio because of the depression?
Yeah, everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody lost their job. Yeah. And down there in that Rio benefit, that those two fellows have been there for years. Jeff Stanley, he's dead. And a fellow by the name of Monroe, he's gone. But it was the place to work, believe me.
Mm-hmm. Your dad thought it was a good place to work, too?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody. It was just, it was, they called when you worked at the Rio, you just call it the old soldier's home because you had a job there for life.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody liked each other.
Did any of your other relatives work at the Rio?
My brother-in-law, Ike Bennett. And my father-in-law worked there, Roger Bennett.
So when you showed up for work in 1945, you weren't going someplace strange because you had a lot of people you knew that already worked there.
No, I didn't know nobody.
Oh, you didn't?
It was strange to me.
But your dad had been there and...
Well, I didn't know nobody, though.
Right, you didn't personally, though.
No,
yeah.
No.
How did you happen to go to the field?
I was working at Sears and Roebuck.
What were you doing there?
I was manager out in their garage.
Oh.
And when I went there, I didn't pass for the Army. And they said, you better get into a place where they're making parts for trucks or Army.
More
something
material.
To do. Yep. And so I went out and shot for 3 months. And I worked for on a lathe. And when that 3 months is up, the war was over, the Second World War, and so I got laid off, and I was laid off for a long, long time.
On the murder?
Yes. And,
what did you do during the interim while you were laid off?
That's when he was working out at the farm, right?
Yeah, I worked...
Oh, that's
at,
right.
At Oakmus, yeah, I worked out there. And then I went to Oldsmobile in 1940, and I worked on the line, and I was there when the last... When they took all the spare tire off the car and all the chrome, and I worked there 9 weeks. You know what they always did? They always worked you 9 weeks and how they lay them off so they can't get with the union and start drawing money. And so when I got laid off, I was drawing $7 a week unemployment.
Oh my goodness.
And it was tough going because we were expecting, we were paying rent. And
having to drive back and forth, the gas and everything.
Yep. And so that's why I went to Sears. I had a choice of going back to Olds, but I didn't like it.
You didn't like it? Why?
Nope.
Why was that?
I didn't like working on the line.
Oh, it was line work.
Yeah, I just didn't like it.
Monotonous?
Well, no, it wasn't that. I just didn't like it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I didn't like shop. So I went to Sears and got in good with them and stayed 2.5 years. Then I stayed when the shop went down at the rail. I had a lot of parties that was booked, and so they said, well, you stay until these parties are over with, and then give us a key, clubhouse will be done. So after, so this Eaton come by and he said, Fern, I understand you was ready to retire. And I said, yes, I have my 30 years and 3 months. So he went to Mr. Shelley, and that worked at Rio. He said, Shelley, you know Vernie. He said, take care. And so I went with John over to John Bean after I retired.
Oh, you did?
Yes, 11 years.
Oh, you worked there 11 more years?
And I worked on 11 more years for Mr. Shelley.
What did you do with John Bean?
Same thing. Washed their car. I was just like a marble. You just throw the marble in the room and it just rolled all over. And what job was to be done, it was mine. And I used to go to the bank for them, go to the bank, wash their cars, and anything that they had to be done. And I'd work 3 hours, 8:30 to 11:30. And they paid me good enough, and my wife would go in with me, set the car and wait 3 hours for me, mm-hmm. and then we'd go out to eat, go to shows, and go to Las Vegas.
And, you enjoyed life.
Yeah, yeah. So I got a chance to see Woody Herman, Count Basie, Stan Kenton, Liberace, Elvis Presley, Wayne Newton, Tom Jones, and Frank Sinatra, and,
oh,
and Sammy Davis Jr.
All these people at Las Vegas?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, they'd come to Lansing, a lot of them, too, in Detroit. So I got a chance to see them all, Tom Jones, and Tony Bennett, mm-hmm. and, there's just so many of them, country music.
How was the Elvis show? Was it pretty good?
There were 62,000. That, when I retired in 75, Elvis was at the Pontiac Stadium. There were 62,000 of us there that night.
Wow.
But and my, my
his career, yeah.
Yes, and my son-in-law was a cousin to Elvis Presley, and
really?
I've been out to Graceland
in Memphis.
Yeah, and I've seen Mickey Rooney.
Oh, you have
Alice Faye. Oh, I liked her, Alice Faye.
Wasn't she lovely?
Yeah.
Did you know any? I'm going to change the subject a little bit. Did you know any of the people who worked in the clubhouse before you? Were there some of the other people around there?
I've heard his name. His name is Horton.
Okay.
And I guess he was so bad of having a rheumatoid arthritis. And it just took him minutes, hours, sometimes to even get out of the car, to get inside.
Okay. But, so he really couldn't do much of a job then?
No. I don't know. And all that nice equipment that we had at the Rio, the projectors, they gave that to Civic Center.
Oh,
they did? All gave to Civic Center.
When the clubhouse closed?
No, while I was there. They quit showing the movies, and they give all that projectors to Civic Center.
Okay.
And you see that this clubhouse was built in 1917, and it was built for the employees. And they had a huge stage, four dressing rooms. It was 115 foot long and 68 foot wide. And we used to have a lot of bingo parties there. And Jerry Byrne, you know, would be up there calling the numbers. Mm-hmm. But I just can't tell you the feeling there was. They never said, I never had a feeling I don't want to go to work. Never. You talk to anybody, and they'll tell you, Vern Haight was always on the job. Whether I was sick, hurt, I was there.
What happened to all the things in the clubhouse when everything ended, when the Rio went out of business?
Well, there was I have a picture of it out there. There was an auctioneer's come in, and auction it off. I understand that the old car, the 33, went to Portland. The fellow that runs the elevator over there bought it. And I have a lot of the organ up there that they brought from Olds' home. I have seven other reels of the
rolls.
I never knew where that organ went.
Well, I think that it went to Idaho.
What Idaho?
The reason I think that is because, let me see, 89 or 90, when I was managing the museum there, I got a phone call from a museum in Idaho, and I cannot remember what city. They had the organ, and they wanted to sell it, and they wanted to know if we would buy it, since, you know, we're the Ari Olds Museum, we kicked it around for a while, but it would have been so expensive, and it's so big, we didn't know. How could we afford to ship it back here? Where would we put it when we got it where it was?
And it didn't work.
It didn't work?
No. Now at the very end, maybe 8-10 years, it never worked.
Oh.
And they had everybody working on it, and just, you're better off without it.
Well.
Because it just didn't work.
Hmm, that's interesting.
They would come up there at noon hour and work on it. And fellas that worked in the engineering and all that, they just couldn't get it to work right.
Hmm.
But it did work at one time, but I do have the rolls upstairs. I have a film upstairs of fellas that went over to Africa, and they got up there in the hills or mountains, I guess. It's a picture of when they're riding along, the black kids, you know, they never seen a truck. And the lions would be laying alongside the road, and giraffes. And they got out there in the hills. There is mountains in Africa, isn't there?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they got up there in the mountains, and they was trying to go up these hills with this truck. And they'd get stuck. They'd have to put chains on the truck and keep pulling with other trucks to get the truck out. I had to film it.
Were those real trucks?
Yep, yes. Yep.
Who went on this expedition? Someone from the Rio?
Yes. Lonnie Hudson was in charge of it.
So several men that worked there
at
went
the Rio.
On this safari?
Yes, Lonnie Hudson was in charge of it.
Oh.
Now, he's passed away. And his son worked in engineering. But...
I wonder how the Rio trucks got to Africa. Had they been somewhere, if they'd been sold there to a safari company?
I don't know where they drove them there.
Interesting.
You see, and where they would go to the mountains and go up there, and they would see if they could climb the mountains and how much power they had.
But it was the test. That's
there
was what I was
test.
Just thinking.
There was testing.
That's what it was
yeah,
testing them.
Testing them.
Hmm. Oh, that is so interesting.
Yeah.
I never knew they did that.
Yeah. So, there's so much. If I sat here and told you, you'd be here a long time. But it was a place.
Everyone that we have talked to, right, even one person we did, everybody we've talked to has said the same thing. It was their home, it was a family, everybody cared about one another.
Oh, yeah.
And we have one person we interviewed that started out saying, didn't like it there, so on and so on. Didn't have that family feel. He didn't agree with that. It was just a place to work. But he said at the end of the interview, and he kept all kinds of pictures and memorabilia. You don't keep things unless it really meant something to you. And toward the end of the interview, he was saying,
yeah.
I kind of miss it, you know.
Did you ever interview Labrette?
Who?
Labrette.
No.
Well, there's a fella you should talk to because he's up the shop. He just lived Rio.
What? I guess I don't...
Labrette.
Labrette?
Labrette.
I wonder how would you spell that?
I don't know. Labrette.
Labrette, okay. And he lives in Lansing, do you think? Well, that's all right.
I'll spell it the way it sounds.
Yeah, I did too. Perhaps we
well,
somebody else might know too.
I should know it.
That's all right. We'll
Labrette. In fact, he had his wedding reception there in the clubhouse up the stairs in your room.
Oh.
And you know, I was trying to think. Lowell Labrette.
Thank you.
And he works, the last I knew, he works over near the Capitol Airport.
Oh.
Press department. He was one of the foremen. And his boy just got killed. He was in the service, and he just got killed in an automobile accident.
Here in the States?
Yes.
Oh, for goodness
sake. And then I knew his wife. And he has two daughters that's working for Meyer Thrifty Acre. And I used to hold that little kid in my arms, a boy. And he had beautiful kids. Oh, them girls. They were, you know, the Mexican girls. They were pretty girls. But he raised a nice family.
Yeah, we had a nice time talking to him. He works over at Dema.
Yes.
We went over there to
yep.
talk to him there.
Talked
yep.
with his wife on the phone, and she just seemed so friendly. And
we met her at the reunion
that's
at
right,
the Coral Gables.
Yeah,
that's
right.
They were down there.
Little gal.
Do you go to the Rio reunion?
No, I never been to one.
Hmm.
When I give the key, I just kind of said, that's it.
He moved on.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they've asked me to come, but a lot of times we've been traveling a lot, and now you're lucky to find me here today because I have a son-in-law that has property up across the straits near Cleo, I think, Cleo. And we would have been up there.
Mm-hmm.
But I have pictures up in the garage that I have been collecting for 50 years. I have pictures of Ariel's dad and mother, his family.
True.
But the time, like I say, you've come the wrong time. I'll back my car out and let you see them.
Glad to. Yeah.
And the big band, I have their picture, the real band, two pictures mm-hmm. of them.
Oh,
and
great.
I have a picture of their whole reel years ago that shows the South Washington and North Washington, all the people that worked at the reel and all the women that worked in the office, they're all standing on this canopy. Thank God it didn't drop
right.
through.
When it was good.
Yes. Yes.
Oh my.
Now, I was going to tell you, there was when Henry Hunn was there, there was there was a fella that author, a poet, that used to come from Detroit.
Oh, Edgar Guest.
Edgar Guest. And I met him there.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah. Edgar Guest. Oh, and he came. And he got to be on the ball.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Why is that?
Well, he was Henry Hunt's friend.
Oh.
And everything had to be just right.
Henry Hunt, H-U-N-T?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And his son, the president there, his son worked in engineering. And everything had to be just so. You know, Joe Scheer came one time. He was the second president that I knew. And they had a nice picture of Henry Hunn made. And they hung it up the steering table. And they put a cloth over it, you know, and everybody stood around their beer and thought it was a great deal. They pulled that down. Talk about a man being mad. He said, "Holy Christ, fellas." He said, "I ain't dead."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "I'm not dead." He said, "Get that picture down and don't never put it up again."
Mm.
So we put it up in the attic. And after a few years, then Mr. Tucker took it down to Detroit, where Sheila lived, and gave it to him. Oof, was he mad. Well, they all stood there, you know, was going to cheer and all that. Well, that cheering didn't go over so well. One day, they said to me, "Dale Roberts is coming here."
Oh, yes.
You know, yes.
Yes,
and they said, "No, we're going to have him spend the day, so get the clubhouse all in good shape." So he came to the clubhouse. And most of all Lansing was there, and he bought a lot of trucks because he had a lot of horses, and he moved these horses around these trucks down in California. But talk about a good-looking guy.
Mm. Yes, he was. I wish I'd been there that day.
He was handsome. Well, you've seen him on television now, haven't you, where he drives that big car around, his hair's gray. Has a big long horns on the front of his car.
Mm.
That's Dale.
He's from Oklahoma, so.
Yeah.
Hmm.
He was.
The real special built some of his horse vans and
yes.
his trucks and things
yep.
for him.
Yep. He bought a lot of them.
Hmm. So you got to meet him, or you just saw
no,
him?
No, no, no.
Did they have a banquet for him, or a
no,
lunch?
No,
or?
No. He just came in, and I talked to him.
Did
yeah.
you?
Oh,
what did
kid.
You talk about?
Well, we just talked about his horse and. The movies he made, and a lot of kids come in, and they said, "Oh, Dale, where's your horse?"
Oh.
And he said, "I left it back in Hollywood."
Oh.
I said, "We wanted to see your horse so bad."
Oh.
Yeah. And some even had the wrong time to come. They come a week ahead of time.
Oh.
The kids.
They were so excited.
So excited to see
yeah.
him. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. And I seen Blackstone.
The Magicians.
Yep. Boy, she's...
Sounds like anybody who was famous who came to Lansing ended up one way or another.
Well, somewhere along the line, you got a chance to see them. But a lot of them, we'd go to Las Vegas, and then we'd go to, what's the other place?
Atlantic City.
And then we saw Mickey Rooney in Chicago, or in Detroit, New York, the Sugar Babies.
Sugar Babies.
Yep. And he left there and went to England. But a lot of them
came to the clubhouse, didn't they, over the years?
Yes.
A lot of important
yep.
people. Local and statewide and
that's
countrywide.
Right. Yep. Anybody that was something. And then when the Civic Center came in, then it gradually began to go down. And that's when it began to hurt.
When did the Civic Center first get built?
Sometime in the 50s, something like early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Late 50s.
And now,
60s.
Now they're going down.
Yeah, they have a
see?
New one.
Yeah, they're going down. But
Mr. Haight, I just have a couple of questions. One of the things that I like to know about is family background a little bit. So there's just a couple of more things. I know a little bit about your dad.
Yeah.
But I wanted to know, was he born in Michigan too, like you? Was he born here?
Dakotas.
He was born out in the Dakotas. Were they ranchers or settlers out there?
I don't know. All I know, my dad was 13 years old when he left home.
He left without his family on his own?
Well, yeah, he just wanted to go out and do something. He ran away from home when he was 13.
Wow.
And he went to shoe horses at Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey.
Oh.
And then he went over to Panama Canal shot a lot of the mules. And he said he used to die there by the hundreds.
Because of the malaria.
Yeah, yeah. And working so hard and so hot.
All the mules died.
Yes.
Huh. And how did he end up here? After all of those adventures.
Well, I don't know unless he got a ramming around and kind of like Michigan. And then my mother was born in Indiana.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And there's a funny thing. My dad had a glass shoe and my mother had a white shoe on glass. And when they got together, they were mates. They were mates.
For goodness sake.
Yep.
Huh. Ooh, that's kind of spooky.
Yeah.
So my dad shot horse around Lake Odessa and Mulligan. I was born in Mulligan. Then we went, I think I lived there about a month. And then we went to, lived on Thompson Street, 1905 Thompson Street.
In Lansing.
Yep. But,
so you don't know how they both ended up here, your mom and your dad?
Well, yeah, because the Depression came on and my dad wanted to come back shoeing horses. So, the horse right down here at the end of the street.
Oh, I see.
It was a blacksmith shop.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What I meant was how he ended up in Lansing, from all of his travels and everything.
Yeah. Well,
he just stayed.
He just met and he shot horses in Mulligan.
Uh-huh.
And
I see, in the area.
In that area.
Yeah.
And
where did he meet your mother?
Pardon?
Did they meet here? Your dad and your mom, did they meet here? I mean, in the Mid Michigan area.
Yes. Well, they were married in Charlotte.
Oh, okay.
So, and my dad used to go out over here to follow the fairgrounds and shoe horses.
Uh-huh.
And I was with him the day the horse kicked him.
A horse kicked him?
Yeah, on the race horses. And they were, years ago, those were old buildings in 29, and it pushed him right out through the side of the building. And he said, this is the last horse that I'm ever going to shoe. Not another horse is ever going to kick me.
Mm.
So he quit here and went to Oldsmobile, and he was smart cooking. He got into he was on the line, something about engineering, I think that was it, before he got through making, where they make tools.
Tool and die.
Yep. He died in 1962. No, I'm wrong. 1952.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My mother and dad are buried up here in Weberville Cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like he had a very interesting early life.
Yeah, he kind of around.
I think you've had a very interesting life so far, and you're still going.
The only part about this, when I retired, I was 56.
Oh, you retired from the Rio, or Bean?
Well, when it went down.
Oh, that's right. Of course.
When it went down in 75, I was 56. Now I'm 74. So you see, but I'm pretty lucky to have all these years retirement.
Yes.
And in there, a nice gal here. And,
did you get any kind of, I know a lot of the people that worked at Rio lost benefits, retirement benefits and everything else, and what happened at the very end, did you get retirement benefits, or were you caught up in that situation too?
No, I got my retirement.
Because I had
my 30 years and 3 months.
And so you retired before they closed the doors?
No. After.
After.
Yep.
But you were lucky enough to get your retirement.
Yep. And I invested money and bought a lot of stock and different things.
We've talked to so many people who didn't get anything from, the bankruptcy. They lost their retirement benefits and maybe eventually got $100 a month or whatever.
Well, I know a lot of the fellas that lack maybe a week of getting their retirement. I think a couple fellas shot themselves.
Yeah,
and they turned out to be alcoholics, and a lot of divorces, because a lot of women say, well, you ain't got nothing. You've worked all these years. You haven't got anything. We're gonna call it quits.
Mm-hmm.
It was a sad deal.
Very tragic.
Yes.
Especially when you work your entire life thinking you're going to retire from that place and you'll have enough to live on, and then suddenly the rug's pulled out. We had a volunteer at the museum whose husband was in that same position, and he went.
What was his name?
Let me think a minute.
Yeah.
And he had a nervous breakdown, and he was never the same after that. His wife said eventually they got, with the settlement, they got a little, $130 or $150 a month or some such thing, and she said it cost more than that just for insurance.
Yeah.
I'll have to think about her name. I can't recall it at the moment. He's passed.
There's Bob Montague. You ever interviewed him?
Bob Montague?
Yes. His wife just passed away. He was a handsome man. He had class when he walked. The women just loved to see him. They used to dress good. I was trying to think of there was a club in Lansing, Clark. What is it? Hold on. That was Clark's. What would do? The Steering Gear Club would go up at Clark's Tailoring on Allegan.
Mm-hmm.
They used to be on Allegan. They've moved now. The guys were, they were dressed. They used to really have suits. And when we'd have the card parties, the girls' club would put it on. And we had a lot of pretty women. And I'll tell you, they were something.
We heard about some pretty wild, that they had parties up in the Staring Gear Club.
We were
told that they had.
Yes.
Lots of parties up there.
Yeah, but
Louis used to tell us.
Louis liked to drink. He liked his drinks.
Yeah, I can kind of imagine. He's kind of a party guy.
He's a nice fella.
Yes, he is. We like him.
Well, you couldn't help but like Louis. But I attended bar up there in the Steering Gear Room. And when some of the fellas came in, I knew them. You knew every form. You knew everybody. And when I come in, I say, well, you want a triple shot. To calm them down, because it all keyed up during the day, and they'd take double shots, and we'd have parties up there, played cards, a lot of cards. 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. And but you never saw anybody get boisterous, want to get up and fight. They were all buddies. That's all there was to it. They were friends. We all were.
Did the steering gear have its own, or the clubhouse have its own separate liquor license from the city? You know, or was it just like regular a restaurant getting a liquor license?
Well, it was my job to take care of it. I don't think we had, yeah, we had a liquor license.
I guess you would
have. Yeah, we'd have to. Yeah, we had to. And we had a lot of steps come up alongside the building. And they would drive up with their truck, and we'd have to carry all that Slitz beer up there. And another one of our jobs, we'd carry that Slitz beer up there and have it all cold and nice for them when they come in there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they were ready to. And then they'd go down in the basement, or sometimes in the main lobby, or in the big ballroom, and that's where they had the banquets. And we had that big, huge screen, always, just like it went. Nicer screens than some of these movies got today. There was huge that would show 115 foot and big pictures that would show movies and different things. It was educational for the foremen and speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And one time we had in Bowl from Michigan, University of Michigan.
Bo Schembechler.
Yeah. And you know the fella that used to announce over the radio, how
Ernie
excited.
Harwell?
Well, I just got a ball out of the shop garage there that was just written by, or signed by Ernie Harwell. And I could tell you about Biggie Munn. And when he was up to the podium talking, and he said to the boys, the white boys, black too, he said, "I'm going to tell you, fellas," he said, "you see these black boys, what they're doing? They start up at JCPenney's, and they run the whole length up to Michigan State University. If you boys, you white boys, don't start doing that, you have to be on the team. Look at them today.
Mm.
Look who's taking over today. The blacks are good athletes."
Mm-hmm.
But he said, "You guys get in these buses and ride out there." He said, "Get off the buses. You start walking. You start running.
You're getting soft."
Yes. But so while he was standing there, Oldsmobile had brought over, after he won the Rose Bowl, they brought on the stage this beautiful Oldsmobile. You never seen so much chrome on an automobile in your life. And when I pulled open the curtains, his knees buckled. That was his.
It was a gift to him.
It was a gift. And another good speaker was Doherty.
Oh, really?
Oh, when he had a few drinks.
Doherty
could talk.
Could he?
Yes, he was good. He just couldn't help but like that.
Different than Perlis, who doesn't know how to speak, but it's still fun to listen to.
But Doherty was Irish, and he loved to tell stories.
He had the gift.
He could tell them. Go right out of your seat on the floor. But he was good. And I talk too much?
No, I'm getting anxious to see the pictures, because you keep telling us about them.
Well, you want to go out?
Yes, we'd love to.
Well, why don't you wait here just a second till I move my cars out? It's kind of cold.
I'll back mine up. I think I parked right behind you.
I've got to move two cars there.
Oh.